You're tuned in to the Health After 30 podcast. And in today's episode, we're talking about somatophobia, the fear of being in your body, or rather the fear of connecting with your body to heal trauma. We're not only just talking about somatic healing, we're talking about how we can connect our mind and body with the use of plant medicine in form of sacred ceremony to have transformative healing.
Hey, I'm Alana Bonneman, naturopath and holistic nutritionist. This podcast is dedicated to reclaiming your health by harnessing yourself as your biggest asset. Get ready, because this is where we stand up for your body's ability to heal, go against outdated norms, and say yes to change, creating true and lasting success, all from the inside out. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Health After 30 podcast, and let's get started.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Health After 30 podcast. Today, my guest and I are getting into mind-body connection, healing, the art of tapping into your higher self, your higher purpose through personal transformation. I am humbled and I have the honor to be joined with Shelley Persaud, a doctor of chiropractic, the author of Somatophobia, who works with this self-healing methodology, which she has coined as mind-body synchronization. We go deep into this, so I won't talk too much about it now, but I personally find it to be quite profound and very, very interesting. In our conversation, we will talk about why it's so difficult to heal trauma and how we can use plant medicine in a sacred way to reconnect our mind to our body to not only heal pain, trauma, release tension, but also to awaken higher consciousness. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Alana Bonneman, and let's get into today's episode. Welcome to the Health After 30 podcast. Hello, and thank you so much for being here. Today, I am joined with Dr. Shelley. How are you, Shelley?
I'm absolutely wonderful, sister. How are you?
I'm really well. I'm well today. I'm feeling very well in general. So we've got a lot to talk about today. We've just had a bit of a pre-production, pre-interview chat. And what we're going to start this conversation with is the topic somatophobia. Can you, Shelley, just introduce what somatophobia is and perhaps just explain what it's about?
Absolutely. So when we look at the word somatophobia, if we were to split it into two, we have somato, referring to the body, phobia, meaning fear. Bring those two back together, fear of the body. And being a chiropractor, I witness this in my practice all the time. The level of disconnection between the mind and body, which creates disembodiment, where we're not living in our body. We're living above our necks, up here in our head. And when we live in our head, not connected to our body, our center of gravity is up here. So we're not even going through life balanced, because our center of gravity needs to be down in our body. So this fear of being in our body really stems from, if we were to go back and look at, why do we have somatophobia? Where does it come from? What does it even mean? Am I afraid of my body? No, I'm not afraid of my body. Well, to truly drop into your body, fear is going to arise. Your ego doesn't want to lose power and control over you when you drop into your body, because the ego never drops below the head.
Why not? Why would it not drop below the head?
Well, allow me to guide you on a journey back to every single trauma that we've experienced. And let's admit it, every single one of us have traumas, have childhood wounds, have suppressed emotions.
Inherited traumas.
That's a whole
generational
other
traumas.
Cultural, collective traumas, everything that our ancestors didn't heal, epigenetics has proved, is stored in our DNA until someone comes along in the lineage and says, I'm here, I will heal it. So what happens is, one, we also did not receive a rite of passage introducing us to our body. And if we look at the human complex, the mind, body, soul, the mind is masculine, the body is feminine, and the soul is when the mind and body are in divine union. So we have access or connection to our soul. Our higher self is embodied.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get back to the ego, this journey of why does the ego never drop below the head? And if we look at the story that I'm going to tell, every single time a trauma occurs and our nervous system is unable to integrate it, process it, heal it in that moment, you know, let's say, for example, an extreme example is abuse. So when you are in that act of being abused, what happens is the pain of that abuse is felt in the body. The nervous system then sends messages to the brain, danger, danger, we have abuse occurring down here. We need some help. But unfortunately, those messages, the ego comes online to keep us safe. Its sole purpose was to literally
protect.
Keep us safe, to protect,
protect us.
To protect and serve. Which is always funny. I always like to liken the ego to, you know, the police motto, to protect and serve. But how are either or really protecting and serving us? Our ego has actually become our master now. It is the one dictating and running the show. Because trauma after trauma that is not processed, those traumas and the impact of the trauma, which is the pain, gets stored in the body. At the site of impact, our higher self or soul flees the scene. It's like incoming trauma. So to remain pure, to keep the innocence of our higher self, because our higher self or soul knows no pain, knows no trauma. It's pure. It's trauma-free, fear-free, pain-free, symptom-free.
Okay.
So to protect its purity, the higher self or soul flees from the scene of trauma, leaving a void space in the body. So now, just like with an injury, what occurs in the coming weeks? Scar tissue, fibrous adhesions. Now you may have a frozen shoulder or hip pain because that trauma, the impact of it and the pain was never dealt with. So now scar tissue fills into that void space where the higher self checked out from. Well, without a higher self connected to that part of the body where the pain of trauma impacted the body, someone has to control that part of the body. So the ego raises its hand and says, okay, I will create a false identity, which is what I call a trauma self. And this trauma self reigns from the brain, from the mind. It reigns from there and it controls that part of the body where the trauma occurred. But the ego can't drop really into the body. The ego's sole purpose is just to create these identities to protect and service, to prevent pain from showing up again. So that then gives rise to now trauma after trauma. The ego builds more fear, more fear, more fear, because, wow, you've experienced a lot of pain. So I have a lot of trauma selves or false identities that I've had to create to keep you, this bodily vehicle, safe from
feeling
pain.
Safe from pain. So somatophobia is probably being safe from, like, the ego allowing you to feel safe from the pain that we experience.
Exactly. And then without a rite of passage, if we were to drop our mental awareness, when I say we drop into the body, it's our mental awareness. It's not the ego that drops into the body. So our mind drops into the body, and that's the scary part. And what happens and why it's so scary, who taught us what to do when we drop into our body?
Well, that's the rite of passage that we missed, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, no one ever says, let's go deep there. Although I feel like now being in my mid-30s, a lot, you know, it's common practice now. Maybe it wasn't back in the 80s or the 90s, but now it's common practice that people are going to therapy and people are talking about and they're unpacking their traumas. I feel like everyone in this day and age talks about their traumas. Not openly, but it's a bit more accepted.
Normalized.
It's normalized. Yeah. So what role does somatic healing play when addressing traumas, and how does that differ from other methods?
Well, and even if you look at, let's say, going to a therapist and talking about it, we are in a state of consciousness during that therapy session. So where are we in the consciousness scale? If we have not reclaimed that space in our body where the pain occurred, we haven't healed the pain of that trauma, then we are in our ego self, our lower state of consciousness, our trauma self. We're living in our reptilian brain, fight, flight, freeze, because that pain in the body keeps those messages of danger, danger, danger flowing through the nervous system, sending it to the brain. Help, we need some help down here. Can you come down here and find a solution in the body to get rid of this pain? So when we are in that state of consciousness of fight, flight, freeze, of our ego and trauma self, what we're doing is we're actually spinning in that story. We're telling the story again and again, actually re-traumatizing ourselves. And we're not getting out of the loop, we're reinforcing it. And I spent 15 years trying so many different modalities, and none of it worked. I would see superficial results maybe for a week or two. I would feel a little bit better, but then the same triggers would show up that would poke the same traumas and wounds. And I'm like, but I've addressed that. And that really led to a lot of frustration and burnout. I'm like, I know there is more possible. I'm doing all these modalities. Why are they not working? Exactly. And on my journey of healing, that's one of the things I remembered. This light bulb moment went off one day, and I was doing all of those modalities from my reptilian brain, from the same state of consciousness in which the trauma was created.
What keeps us, like, what's the belief behind, well, not even the, like, I mean, it's hard to even address the belief that's there, but what's the thing that perhaps allows us to stay there or prevents us from getting out?
The four-letter word, it's called fear. Adaphobia is literally what prevents us from getting out of that cesspool. And then, of course, no rites of passages. A lot of people may want to get out of it, and they're trying modalities, but they're not getting out of it. So they're out there looking. They want to get out of the cesspool, but all they may be finding are modalities that keep them in the cesspool, because it's like there's no action being taken to actually make that shift in consciousness.
They're not changing or like... they're trying all the things, like they're doing all the external, but perhaps they're not. I think a lot of the time when I work in practice with women, like trying to get onto healthy habits with nutrition, it's like you need to identify with someone who is healthy and eats healthy. You can't just do the things if you're not believing it. Or if you're a smoker, you know, you actually have to say, I'm not a smoker, not I'm trying to quit. You know, you really have to identify with what you're trying to be. Maybe that's what you're alluding to. It's like to be able to get out, to be able to change, you need to actually create the change from within, not just do the things, but become the change.
Absolutely. And that means we have to conquer somatophobia, because to go within, we can't just go within where we already are living in our head, go within to our ego monkey mind state, where we have 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day. We have, 40 to 60 thoughts a minute. And traditional meditation, I tried it and it didn't work for me too. It was one of those other modalities that I'm like, this is an ancient technique. It should work. Yeah. What's wrong with me? That meditation, just sitting and meditating, being aware of my thoughts and trying to push them away, because no thoughts, I need to be clear. That didn't work. And along my healing journey, again, as I dropped into my body, those thoughts are like tree branches. Yeah. The feelings and emotions that are attached to the pain of trauma are the roots of the tree. Just because you can't see the roots doesn't mean they're not there. And that's why meditation didn't work for me, because I was, again, in a lower state of consciousness, approaching my meditation practice from my ego or my trauma self, reptilian brain, fight, flight, freeze messages flowing through my body. So I'm not in a state of relaxation. And I was doing nothing to make that jump from a lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. Science proves that to get out of our reptilian brain and to grow our midbrain, we have to do that which is uncomfortable. If we stay in our comfort zone called the cesspool, We're never going to make the jump out of our reptilian brain.
We all want to get out of the cesspool. We want to get out of that state. Fear holds us back. What can we do? Or how can we do this?
Well, first and foremost, we really have to take an honest look in the mirror at what we are doing and ask ourselves, is it working? Or am I spinning my wheels? Am I in the cesspool still? And if I am, why am I going to keep doing the same thing that's not working? And then from there, and I'll share my journey of what works for me, which is what led to the birthing of this body mind synchronization foundational framework to unite our mind and body, because that is why we don't have connection to our soul. So I knew I came here for divine union. It's like, I am not here. I'm not going to settle for a relationship that's less than. I knew I came for my higher purpose, and I wasn't going to stop until I found it. And in my journey of healing and getting burnt out and frustrated, I discovered plant medicine. And then that shifted me from my lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. And from there, dropped into my body. And that's where I found everything I was looking for. Once I conquered somatophobia, dropped into my body, everything I was looking for, all the knowledge and wisdom, all those light bulb moments of, why did all of these other modalities that I spent so many years doing, why didn't I get anywhere? And the biggest piece, it always comes back to the ego, which stands for edging God or goddess out. So we're literally edging our God and goddess, our higher self, our soul out and further away, which is the essence of the word disembodied. We are living disembodied. Our higher self or soul is outside of our body. Our awareness is external. And we see this in religion. You need to go to an external temple or church, pray to an external God, and you're going to be saved. Well, our body is a temple. What do temples house? Our own inner God and goddess, our own inner masculine and feminine. So our body is the temple we should be going to and checking in. But when we look at the effects of traumas, and every time we experience a trauma and a piece of our soul we lose connection with, it checks out, it flees from the scene, the bigger the trauma self or ego gets. And that is basically indicative of the intensity of somatophobia that one will experience in this journey from the head into the body, which is a beautiful quote by Buddha. The longest journey a man will ever make is from the head to the heart, which in my journey, we have to go all the way down to the foundation of our temple body, our pelvic floor, womb for women, hara for men, and then we have to rise back up into our heart. And that is truly how. So for me, what I view this body-mind synchronization practice as, it's a marriage of my mind and body. It's a quieting of my egoic monkey mind, the trauma self, the fear, realizing that that is not me. That is a false identity.
Identity.
That I have identified as.
To protect yourself.
But it's not me. So anytime the fear shows up, it's a journey into my body. Because to quiet all those thoughts in meditation, I have to uproot the root causes of those thoughts. They're connected to feelings and emotions in my body. So what that practice looks like is literally bringing my mental awareness into my body, checking in, where am I feeling pain or stuckness? Because no matter what pain, no matter what symptom, no matter what trauma, childhood wounds, suppressed emotion, no matter what it is we inherited from our ancestors, it's all one and the same. It's all stuck energy. That's all it is. So how do we get stuck energy moving? And that's now the mind is in the body. It's identified the stuck energy of the pain or the restriction or the stuckness or the blockage that's showing up in my relationship or my work or my life or whatever. And then I use my mind to awaken my life force energy. So as a chiropractor, I spent so many years removing interference in my patients' nervous systems, allowing their own life force energy to flow. And I got burnt out because I knew there was more and I felt them not in their body. And that was really what, okay, so my patients are disembodied. How do I get them into their body?
When they have that fear, they don't want to go there.
Not at all. It is so scary. So now this journey from the head all the way down to the pelvis, to the female womb, to the male hara, that is our reservoir of life force energy, which chiropractic philosophy, the power that made the body is the power that heals the body. So I got to thinking and I'm like, if our life force energy is this power that made our body, and it's the same power that heals our body, why is the world in such a state of dis-ease? Why are we so disconnected, disembodied, distracted? Our mind and body is divorced, which is now being projected in relationship divorces. And all of that was what showed me this is what's preventing divine union. And divine union has to be achieved within oneself before in an external relationship. So I knew I was on a path to divine union with my husband, but I had to create it between my mind and body first before I could experience that with my husband.
And you can use that with your husband or your job or you as a parent or you as a friend or you as a colleague. Like it's you and your environment, right? And all the dealings that you have.
It's balance. It's equilibrium. And absolutely. And if we were to look at just one area of our life, for example, our work life, is it balanced? Is it flowing? Mm-hmm. Or are we trying to force it into existence based on what society or business coach or this or that tells us we have to do? So any blockage that shows up, for example, with my work, I always go within. That blockage is in my body. An issue in my relationship, that issue is in my body. So this journey of going into your body to awaken your own life force and then using it to transmute these blockages is literally how you change your reality. Because anything that's showing up in my reality forces me to take responsibility.
Yes. I mean, this is the thing. I want to segue into going within. But before we go there, you mentioned something, your higher self, your soul. I also kind of wrap this up to with perhaps like your purpose, you know, like this calling that one has. Everyone, you know, we get excited about things, like things make us, everyone's different, right? And everyone has their own different thing, but there's things that really light us up inside and where we do feel aligned with what we're doing and how we're doing it. And this higher self, the soul, this perhaps purpose, you talked about it before, and that it flees the scene because it's quite, you know, it's quite a pure state. Can you just talk me, how do you enjoy that side of it more instead of being in this, instead of being at that seat of fear, and worry and lack and all of these feelings that is very shame and guilt, you know, like I feel with all these traumas that we have, they do pop up every time we're triggered by whatever it is. We don't want to go there, as you said, because it's hurting. And then we get stuck in that cesspool. How do we meet it more? How can we live in alignment with it?
What you initially said there, our soul purpose, we're all looking for what is my soul purpose? And a lot of what is out there in society today is all about your soul purpose being external. It's about your job, your work, how much money you're making, your success, what you came here to accomplish and do. And I was also looking for my soul purpose. I thought being a chiropractor was my soul purpose, when being a chiropractor was just a stepping stone on my journey to my higher purpose, which my higher purpose was to free myself from Maya illusion, to get off of this, you know, the cesspool, get out of the cesspool, to get off the hamster wheel, all the different analogies that we have for staying stuck and small and limited. And one of the things that I always like to say is, how do we make this jump? How do we get out of the cesspool? And when we look at the mind, body, soul complex, mind, masculine, body, feminine, soul, divine union, because mind and body are now married and connected. And the more we can marry and connect our mind and body is the more we pull or retrieve our soul home. I do not have control over that part of my body. I don't feel safe in that part of my body. I don't feel agency in that part of my body. I don't feel a connection with my higher self in that part of my body. So this practice that my body guided me in remembering, again, chiropractic being a major stepping stone. And when I go into that space, and literally we have to go into all those painful spaces, all the blockages, all the armor, all the shame and guilt and fear. To heal it, we gotta feel it. So we have to meet it with love, not meet it with anger. I'm so angry that you're there, because that's part of the journey. We will meet the anger, our own anger itself, for being stuck, for being disconnected from our higher self. But we have to meet it with love. We can't fight with fire. So we can't meet that anger, that stuckness, that oppression with more anger, because it's not going to really unravel. So we got to meet it with love. It's a part of who we are. We have to activate that fight, flight, freeze response. And that is where the sacred work that I've birthed really is a rite of passage. It's a, when you drop into your body and when you go into those stuck spaces where traumas and pain are stored. So I literally remembered, okay, how do I do this? And then in my book, Somatophobia, it's the foundational framework. It's the, why are we here where we are? Disembodied, disconnected, distracted, living in a state of dis-ease, divorced. And how do we make our journey home to divine union? Because in that journey of every time you drop your mind into your body, ego quiets. Mind and body are united, and now you can begin the journey of literally going into those stuck spaces and pulling your soul home. When you kick out those stuck energies, when you heal those traumas, you now reclaim space. You reclaim power, power that your ego or trauma self had over that part of your body. So now you, your higher self, has power over that part of your body. You reclaim that feeling of safety in your body, because I'll be the first to say we will never feel safe in our external environment if we don't feel safe in our internal environment, our body, and then our mind as well. Because there is also, just as we have somatophobia, we also have mind phobia. It's still just like talk therapy. It's still staying above the ground because coming back to that journey I guided you on earlier, when trauma occurs, higher self disconnects from the mind-body complex, nervous system sends messages to the brain. Then in the brain, we've got our three minds. We have our conscious mind, subconscious mind, unconscious mind. The minds now start filing away the case story. Okay, so this day, this time, this trauma occurred, these emotions were felt, this pain is lodged in the right hip. So the brain is like filing away, writing the case story, putting it away in the file, tucking it away, locking in the subconscious and unconscious, and literally locking it away. So I spent years doing mental modalities, subconscious reprogramming, consciousness work, quantum physics, trying to change my mind, but I was still working above ground. I wasn't dropping below ground to get to the roots of those stories. Because we can, again, pull out the files, we can read the case story, we can, I'm going to tell myself a different story, but that story and the case file is still in the mind as long as the pain of that trauma is still in the body. So the body has to be healed first and the mind follows.
So we want to get out of the mind, or like allow the mind-body synchronization. We want to start to synchronize. And you've tried different things, and through your own experience, you've found a way that you do this, you practice it, you help people do this. Can you just walk us through how you do this then?
Absolutely. And the key component in this practice is cannabis. And a lot of people are probably going to wonder, why cannabis? Can't we just connect the body and mind without... I get this question all the time. Can't we just connect to our higher self and consciousness without plant medicine, without cannabis? And real quick, before we dive into that, I'll address the why cannabis portion, because it ties into the ego. And we only know two different ways of consuming cannabis. Again, due to no rites of passage. There's recreational cannabis use, which is usually to check. Cannabis, unfortunately, when used recreationally, is to check out, is as a coping mechanism to not want to deal with what you're feeling in your reality. So it's easier after a long day of work to light up a joint and just relax. But are you healing that stress?
The root cause.
Or are you just checking out from it, having a brief vacay from it? And then we have medicinal use. With all of the legalization of cannabis, medicinal use is skyrocketing. But even with medicinal use, it's no different than pharmaceutical use. Because medicinal use, you are now consuming cannabis to treat a pain or a symptom or to alleviate XYZ. Well, if you don't heal the root cause of that pain, symptom, or XYZ, and you stop consuming cannabis, what happens to that pain, symptom, or XYZ? It's still
going
there.
To be there.
And cannabis is a sacred plant medicine that in the Vedas was discussed as one of the five most sacred medicines on this planet. Cannabis actually is what gave birth to yoga, but not the westernized version of yoga. Yoga in ancient times, which the sole purpose was to access our higher consciousness. Where today, a yoga class is comparable to a workout. I did yoga for many years. I never accessed my higher consciousness the way I am accessing it today. There were a lot of things that are a part of this body-mind synchronization practice that is a part of real ancient yoga that is not a part of what I see in yoga today. It loses its authenticity. It loses its purpose. It loses its integrity. There is static. There is interference. But the sole purpose of real ancient yoga was to unite the mind and body. So the mind comes into the body, awakens the body's life force, the power that made the body. Our body is the blood that flows. So when the mind drops you into your body and you're fully present and aware, and the quickest way to drop your mind into your body, check in with your pelvic floor. Pelvic floor flows from, for women, from your coccyx, your tailbone, to your pubic bone. It's like a hammock. For the men, from the coccyx to the pubic bone as well. The perineum sits right in the middle, which is that little piece of skin between the anus and the vagina, or the anus and the scrotum. That is our center point. That's our root chakra. That's our foundation of our temple. So when we drop in there and we just check in, okay, what's my pelvic floor doing? Mind is in the body. And in that briefest of moments, ego, or the monkey mind, is offline, quiets. Because when your mind comes into your body, mind and body are united, there is no room for a third party because the ego is still up here. So now that the mind is in the body, now through the seven different mechanisms to awaken your life force, through these different ways of activating and awakening our life force, now the mind gets to direct, create a blood vessel wall, to direct our life force through that container into the stuck areas, into all the armor, the suppressed emotions, so that we can actually heal ourselves with our own life force. So now the power that made the body can actually fulfill its purpose of healing the body. But it needs the mind to wake it up, and then it needs the mind to direct it through that tunnel into those stuck energies.
Where does the role of cannabis play, and is it vital to use cannabis in this?
Yes. Cannabis is vital simply because our bodies were born with an endocannabinoid system.
What does that mean?
So we have receptors, and these are the most abundant type of receptors in our body and mind. They outnumber any other receptor in our body. So we literally have receptors in our body for cannabis. Our body also produces its own cannabinoids called endocannabinoids, endogenous cannabinoids that our body produces. So we are one with the cannabis plant. Now, the downfall is our endocannabinoid system was supposed to be fully turned on and activated when we were in our mother's womb. But if our mother's endocannabinoid system was not turned on and activated, and she was not producing her own endocannabinoids that were then flowing through her life force into you to activate your endocannabinoid system, and then, for example, through breastfeeding, we were supposed to receive endocannabinoids from our mother's breast milk in order to activate our own endocannabinoid system even further. But for example, my mother, she was in a state of fight, flight, freeze. She didn't breastfeed me. So my endocannabinoid system was deficient. And it's very interesting because the medical realm today actually has created a diagnosis for a deficiency in endocannabinoids. They're actually saying that our endocannabinoid system is not fully functional.
What's the deficiency? Or is it a name for it?
Just endocannabinoid deficiency. Mm-hmm. We are living in our sympathetic nervous system. We're not living in divine union or a state of balance. And when we look at the amount of receptors in our body, we have receptors in our mind, our brain, we have receptors in our body. We have receptors in every organ of our body, basically. Mm-hmm. So what happens when we imbibe cannabis in sacred ceremony? Now, the third way of consuming cannabis, which is with an intention to check in to the body. When we consume cannabis with an intention to check in, to feel, and to heal, the receptors in both our brain and body, they bind to the THC in cannabis as well as the CBD, because we have different two types of receptors. When our receptors bind to the cannabis that we are consuming, we activate our endocannabinoid system in both our mind and body. Hmm. Now, what happens is the endocannabinoid system gets to activate and fulfill its sole purpose. And its sole purpose is to guide us back into a state of balance, equilibrium, or divine union. And it does so because it's like a head honcho master control system. It is above, it controls every other bodily system. It's going to fine tune and make adjustments wherever your mind and body need it to come back into a state of balance. Mm-hmm. It works at harmonizing or synchronizing the right brain and the left brain. It restores balance in our nervous system between our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. When we are endocannabinoid deficient, our ability to create new neural networks is actually inhibited. So when our endocannabinoid system is turned on and activated, we can actually create new neural networks. So they're highways that send messages of fight, flight, freeze. So with the endocannabinoid system activated, we can create new pathways that are not rooted in danger, fear, and trauma. And then with the endocannabinoid system activated, let's look at using cannabis recreationally or medicinally.
I wanted to say that because if we have this endocannabinoid system that's happening and we just need to have cannabis to activate that, why can't we just have a, you know, have a joint and be done with it, or go to our doctor and get some medicinal cannabis and be done with it? Where's the difference there?
And the difference lies in those roots. Those roots of that tree that I talked about. So recreationally, we are checking out. We're not coming into our body. So the endocannabinoid system is not going to do the healing for us. It's not going to magically restore us to a state of equilibrium or balance or divine union without a little bit of our assistance. So if we're checking out, endocannabinoid system is working to try to restore balance. If we're consuming cannabis medicinally to treat that pain or symptom or whatever, the moment the medicinal or the recreational high wears off, endocannabinoid system goes back offline, you go right back into that state of imbalance. So it's like two steps forward, two steps back. You're staying in the same cesspool.
I was going to say that because you said coming into the body, allowing the mind to synchronize with the body, these neural pathways, this is changing. Already that change is allowing you to step out of the cycle that's keeping you in, you know, just having, you know, new input is allowing you to then come out. Yes.
Exactly. So then in this third ceremonial way of working with cannabis to check in, So you've got your endocannabinoid system activated, and now you are going into your body and uprooting those root causes that are leading to the imbalance. Cannabis, even recreationally and medicinally, she is just a mirror. And I call her a she, just like ayahuasca, psilocybin. Their spirits have a feminine essence. They're like a mother. They want to guide you in your healing. When cannabis reflects and reveals us to us, if we approach cannabis in a disembodied, disassociated, diseased state, mind and body divorce, and she reveals that to us, she's just going to reveal that to us. Without an intention, she pulls an intention from our subconscious mind. Yeah. So anyone who has ever experienced fear, anxiety, or paranoia with cannabis, it's because she swung the door open to the subconscious mind, pulled out an intention, tried to show it to you, and again, no rite of passage. This is scary. I don't want to see this about myself. I don't want to feel this. Oh my God, there's too much stimulation, paranoia. What do I do? So it's easier to blame cannabis. Well, I don't want to use cannabis again.
Doesn't work well for me.
Stigma, this preconceived idea and notion and fear, when that fear is fear of us. We don't want to see ourselves. We don't want to feel ourselves. We don't want to have to look in the mirror and go, that's me. That's me. So it's scary. So somatophobia, fear of feeling, seeing all of who we are and everything that we have not integrated and processed and healed, which has led us to being disconnected from our soul. And then with cannabis, yes, she activates our endocannabinoid system. As I like to say, she turns on our higher perspective. She hands us a flashlight. And it can either be a small flashlight so we can pinpoint our mental awareness to a specific trauma in our body, or she gives us a floodlight. And then because there's receptors in our body, she allows us to feel more if we're not checking out with her. So when you're in that heightened, altered state of consciousness, if you're checking in, you can feel your life force more. You can see colors brighter. You can smell things more intensely. So she's already beginning to activate our feeling presence and our mental awareness with the flashlight. So she contributes. I call her the divine union plant. She literally contributes to us restoring that connection between mind and body. She contributes to quieting that ego or monkey mind. So she literally gives us a little bit of a boost into that state of divine union. And then when we're going into our body and we're uprooting all those roots, the root causes of the pain, the symptoms, when we uproot a trauma, we now, when the cannabis high, the sacred ceremonial cannabis high wears off, we no longer have that trauma stored in our body. We have reclaimed space, power, safety, agency, control, and connection with our higher self. So we have moved closer to a permanent state of equilibrium or balance or divine union.
Can people do sacred ceremonies by themselves? If I have cannabis at home, instead of just lighting a joint and checking out, can I just say, okay, I'm going to check in now? Or is there a way to process it?
The ego will say, okay, I'm checking in now, because the ego is so tricky. It'll tell us, oh no, we're not afraid. Deep down, it's like, yeah, I'm really, really, really afraid. So it's yes and no. If someone has, you know, a background with yoga or breath work or somatic healing, then yeah, they may be able to do a ceremony on their own and be able to navigate that space. For those who are completely new to their body, new to cannabis, sometimes it can take a couple ceremonies of one-on-one guidance for me to actually get someone into their body with cannabis. So it really depends on the person, their level of trust, and their connection with their body. If they're more in tune with their body, if they haven't checked out and escaped and had coping mechanisms and addictions that cause to further their disassociation, the journey into their body will be a little bit easier and they may be able to do it on their own. But if not, that's where the guidance comes in. And that is where one of the initial practices that my womb gave birth to, I didn't give birth to any children in this lifetime, gave birth to this self-healing practice. And that's where I call it womb kriyas. And coming back into, if we look at the word womb and kriyas, womb is the home of our life force, our power that made our body, the power that heals our body. And the word kriyas mean action. And when we look at awakening our life force, breath, sound, squeezing, movement, tapping, pumping, all these seven different Shakti activators, they are actions. Breath is an action. Sound is an action. Squeezing your pelvic floor is an action. Tapping your body is an action. Pumping your belly button in and out is an action. So visualizing, it's an action. So all of the life force activators, they are actions, and they originate in the womb because that is the home of our life force energy. This process of synchronizing the mind and the body and the container that the mind creates to direct your breath into those stuck energies, to then squeeze those stuck energies loose. Because if all pain and symptoms and traumas are just stuck energy, so all the Shakti or life force activators are rhythmic activators, rhythmic actions that get those stuck energies moving. And once they start moving, they can unstick. So it's a dynamic meditation, yogic practice. It's an embodiment practice that gets your mind into your body. Every memory of our soul is stored. So every memory, whether it's a good memory, a bad memory, painful memory, pleasurable memory, that memory is stored in our fascia. So all of those unhealed traumas have a memory that is stored in the fascia, which creates restrictions, creates distortions, prevents us from being flexible, creates us from having fluidity in our body. And we have 72,000 nadis, which are what I call life force channels, for our life force to flow through. But when these traumatic memories are stuck in the fascia, they are compressing those life force channels, and our life force energy is not flowing, which is why we're going through life barely alive. We can see, smell, taste, hear, feel less than 5 to 10% of what we're truly capable of, because our life force channels are blocked. And those channels are our pathway to our higher consciousness.
And the longer we have these blockages, the more, I think the harder it is, I guess, as we get older, just, you know, the pains become more. And of course, age has something to do with it, and we do process things. But if you look at a child, they don't, they're very flexible, they're very, you know, they're mobile. And then, you know, over time, everyone, you know, gets these blockages. And so I will share my experience. The first time I met Shelley, so my dad's a chiropractor. Shelley studied under chiropractic, under the same, or the type of chiropractic. So I feel like, in regards to allowing this energy force to go through, I felt like I knew a little bit already. I'm not someone who smokes cannabis regularly. I've, you know, tried it. I know it. But I have never done it in ceremony. And so I tried it. And I remember the first time I tried it, I was really trying to remember what it was like so I could tell everyone on the podcast. Just because there were so many different things, and I can't actually verbalize the whole experience, that experience of connecting with your higher self, where you feel alignment with your purpose in life, is something that I don't feel, I can't really explain it in words. However, the experience of going, so it's not only you inhale, imbibe cannabis, you are moving your body. You are in a form of meditation first. So it's like a very meditative state. And not this sit still, meditate. There's a lot of visualization that goes there. You are imagining, like you are already feeling it just through the visualization. And then you imbibe, so you inhale cannabis, which then allows your body, for those who have ever tried it, to really, it allows your body to flow. And then Shelley, you walk through this process, you move your body. It's, I want to say it's like yoga. So you're doing this yoga, but it's not restrictive yoga where it's like, now it's a downward dog and now it's an upward dog. It's allowing you to move where you want to move. So if you're feeling that there's this tension in your neck, you on a day to day, you probably wouldn't go there because it hurts and you kind of compensate and then your left shoulder starts hurting because you're compensating with your right. But I think when you have cannabis within your body, it allows you to loosen up a bit. So you go to places where you wouldn't go. And maybe that's the ego, what you said, stepping aside. So that stepping aside, you're feeling into these tensions in your body. And then you're doing these movements, which is, I suppose is the somatic therapy side of it, with the breathing, with the pumping, tapping, you use a resistance band. So it's very much yoga, meditation, but all of this, I want to almost say, is like a form of therapy. You're not necessarily talking to a therapist, but what a therapist does is they reflect what you already feel. Like, no therapist has the answer for you. You have all the answers. You just need to be asking the right questions. And in this ceremony, you start to ask, like, questions come up, feelings come up, these stored traumas or blockages in the fascia, these start to move around. So you start, you know, and I think that's the nice influence of cannabis too, is that you start to think about these things and you do that in a non-judgmental way. You do it in a way where your ego is not thinking, are you thinking this, or are you just thinking that you're thinking that? You know, it's a very innocent way for you to address how you're thinking and feeling. And perhaps that's what you're explaining, that mind-body synchronization. I have had an extremely positive experience, and it's not just about the ceremony, but now when I go into life and I get these triggers, which I would usually react to, maybe because what you said, you know, part of these traumas start to get healed. You start to address them. You get to that root cause. These things that would usually trigger me just don't trigger me as much. And when I'm living a life of, like, just not constant triggers, you feel just a little bit more free. Oh my gosh. How nice is it to live a life where you're just not constantly pissed off at things? You start to respond with a positive feeling. And yeah. And so, yes, that's my experience in a nutshell. And I'm very grateful for your work, Shelley. It's very profound and it's beautiful.
What I spent so many years looking for, and I found it in my body, and that is the core essence of this medicine, is you are your own healer, you're your own shaman, guru, chiropractor, therapist, everything rolled up in one. Because as you said, therapists don't have answers for you. You have answers for you. But are you finding them? Do you know where to find them? Because they are hiding out in your body. And that's why I love to call it psychosomatic therapy or a psychosomatic meditation, because as you are dropping into your body and transmuting those traumas, a beautiful thing happens. You don't even need to know what it is you're healing, because the healing occurs so fast. Your body remembers, like, oh yeah, we've done this before. Maybe not this lifetime, but we've done this before. There's a remembrance that comes online, and it's that instinctual intelligence of the body. The body naturally knows how to heal itself. It just needs our direction, which comes from our masculine, our mind. And along the somatic healing process, that's then where the psycho portion comes in, because there will be a point where that bridge between your mind and body is so strong that in the moment of transmuting a stuck energy, you will have the story of that trauma. The subconscious, unconscious mind opens, pulls out the case file, and you're like, oh, that's my father's father wound. Wow. Okay. I'm healing that for my father.
But when we a lot of reflection comes into it, I think.
Yeah. Like, okay, so how my father was with his father, this is how I am with my inner masculine. So I can start seeing and piecing together the dots, which is the third eye awakening, being able to see things that I couldn't see before with my two eyes. Because this is another beautiful analogy. Our two eyes see from the ego state. Our inner eye sees what our ego can't see. Mm. Our inner eye, third eye, sees, our higher self sees through it.
Yeah. I never think healing is about one thing, but for the sake of the purpose, if you were to put one sentence perhaps on a billboard in Times Square in New York City or in the middle of Delhi or in the middle of London or Berlin, what would you put on this billboard? What is your imparting thing that we can kind of hold with us as we like go into our days after listening to this episode?
You gotta feel it to heal it. And where does feeling occur? In the body. So where does healing occur? In the body.
Nice.
Which conquers somatophobia.
Shelly, thank you so much for being here.
It's my absolute pleasure, sister. Thank you for having me. It has been absolutely amazing.
Thanks so much for being here. You could have been listening to anything, but you're here interested in reclaiming your health. I hope you found the episode useful and constructive. If you enjoyed it and would like to show support for the show, please leave a review, as this makes my content more discoverable for other people to enjoy and learn from. Please also consider subscribing to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Finally, the best way to show support for the show is by sharing it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Thanks for listening. Be well, and I'll catch you next time.